evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, October 5th, 2018. The UN World Food Programme delivers food to families in Upper Nile for the first time in years.
It's delivered by 11 boats, not by barges, by the smaller boats. They're coming from Rank, where the food is available to us, and it's making a big difference for us that we can now deliver by boat instead of by air.
And Egypt donates tons of medicine to South Sudan's Ministry of Health.
Some of them antibiotics, some of them painkillers and others. So all these type that needed actually for the Juba Hospital. So we have already accepted the and responded in these needs.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN's World Food Programme says for the first time since conflict broke out in South Sudan in late 2013, aid workers have been able to use river transport to deliver food to nearly 40,000 internally displaced persons in Doma village in former Upper Nile state. Aid officials say it's now easier for aid workers to use boats along the Sobat River to transport food from Reng to Doma since the revitalized peace deal was signed last month. Wake Simon Wudu visited the area and reports from Juba.
Thousands of civilians in Doma village chatted with one another as they queued up to receive their food rations from WFP. For the first time in 5 years, WFP says it was able to deliver over 700 metric tons of food to Doma. WFP Deputy Country Director for Operations in South Sudan, Simon Kemelbeck, says his agency first airdropped the food in Rank and then used the boats to Doma.
We're talking about 39,000 people who received their food ration by boat. It's delivered by 11 boats, not by barges, by the smaller boats. They're coming from Rank, where the food is available to us, and it's making a big difference for us that we can now deliver by boat instead of by air.
40,000 locals rely on food aid, according to WFP and World Vision. When aid agencies fail to deliver, many people resort to eating wild fruits and hunting wild animals. The last time WFP and other aid partners delivered food to this area was in April. Yesterday, each person received 15 kilograms of sorghum along with beans, oil and super cereals, a ration that is expected to last 1 or 2 months. Kemelbeck says delivering food by river is 5 to 6 times cheaper than airdropping it.
There's a big part, Yonglei, Upper Nile, where the roads network is basically non-existent. So we have only two options, basically the airdrops or the river transport. River transport was challenging also because of the security issues, but now things are improving. The boat operators are willing to work with us.
The SPLMIO, which controls Doma, refers to the area as a county in Sobet State, while the government refers to the same area as being part of Lajor State. The UN calls the area Doma Payam under Ulan County of Upper Nile State. Life in Doma, like in many other cut-off areas of the country, is difficult. Thousands of people here do not have access to clean water or food. Due to insecurity in Doma, residents are reluctant to produce their own food because they fear fighting could break out anytime and force them to flee. Thompson Firi is the WFP spokesperson in South Sudan.
These are people who are severely food insecure. These are people who have no one to turn to provide them with food. They actually do not know where their next meal will come from.
22-year-old Nyal Waru is a mother of two. Speaking in English, Waru says she is happy to receive food aid after having no food for several months.
When the food is still coming, the people has died because they are hungry. That is, it's not good. Life is not good. Yes, I am happy. Because the food is gone, all the people is happy.
Kemelbeck says if the peace halts, aid workers can deliver more food to those in need.
We can definitely do more by road, we can do more by river. So it's the process has started, and if the peace holds, then definitely we are very optimistic that more can be done by river.
Kemelbeck says the area is classified under level 3 and 4 according to the latest food security report UN agencies and government released last week, which means people in the area face food crisis and emergency respectively. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on donations, Egypt today donated more than 2 tons of medicine to South Sudan's National Health Ministry in Juba. Egypt's ambassador to South Sudan says the donation is aimed at strengthening relations between the Egyptian and South Sudanese people. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
Egyptian ambassador to South Sudan Ahmed Bahar El-Din says the medicine Egypt handed over to the South Sudanese officials today will not be the first and won't be the last.
It's actually part of a strategy that we apply in order to enhance our relation between people to people. Our firm conviction is we have one people, one destiny in two brotherly states. So what is good for the people of South Sudan is good for the people of Egypt.
El-Din described the types of medicines Egypt donated to the Minister of Health.
Some of them antibiotics, some of them painkillers and others. So all these types that needed actually for the Juba hospital. So we have already accepted the and responded in these needs. As for the quantity, they are almost 2,500 kilograms. So I think it's enough quantity in order to satisfy the basic needs for Juba hospitals and other hospitals under the Ministry of Health.
South Sudan Health Minister Riak Gai says South Sudan appreciates Egypt's generous donation.
We had a very nice meeting this morning with His Excellency the Ambassador of Egypt to South Sudan with the aim of coming to hand over some pharmaceuticals and medical supplies to help our people at this critical moment. And this gift from the people of Egypt came as a support to the peace agreement that has been signed, so we are really very grateful.
It's no secret that government corruption is a widespread problem in South Sudan. When asked how his ministry would ensure that none of the donated medicine would be stolen by corrupt officials, Guy had this to say.
We have a very transparent system. We have a regular distribution of pharmaceuticals across the country, including the areas that are controlled by the oppositions always. With this donation, it will be based on the request, because we have a regular distribution. But if there are some gaps, then they place their request to the central medical supplies and will respond individually.
It's not the first time Egypt has made a major donation to South Sudan. In June last year, Egypt donated 12 tons of food aid and pharmaceuticals to the government to help those in need of humanitarian assistance. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The last group of SPLA-IO rebels who fled to the Democratic Republic of Congo when fighting flared between government forces and Riek Machar's bodyguards in July 2016 in Juba left the DRC. A rebel spokesman says the ex-combatants will be reunited with their families in a country of their choice. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Florence Marshall is spokesperson for the United Nations Organization Stabilization Mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo told South Sudan in Focus by email that the last 12 remaining rebels left the camp yesterday for several destinations, including South Sudan. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Lampol Gabriel says his group is happy the remaining ex-combatants were transported to see their families in refugee camps in Uganda, Kenya and Ethiopia, and says the 12 will decide independently what to do with their lives next.
We have been receiving them at least in 5 or more per day, and they have been taken to Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, Khartoum, those third world, those third countries of their treaty.
Gabriel says the ex-fighters were reunited with their relatives upon arriving at the camps, but says if they so wish to rejoin the SPLA-IO, they can still be trained and deployed as part of the reintegration of forces into one national army.
An ex-combatant is not considered to be an IO anymore, but because they were with us, and so we felt it is our responsibility meanwhile they get back to their families.
Mashal says the UN Stabilization Mission in the DRC explored individual solutions for all rebels and issued travel documents as well as transportation for the former fighters to third countries. Mashal says the mission also disarmed more than 700 SPLM-SPLA-IO members in August 2016 in the Garamba National Park, then moved them to the Munugi camp in the Goma area where they were given food and health care assistance. The South Sudan government says it released 20 prisoners of war from various detention units in Juba this week in accordance with a decree President Salva Kiir issued last week directing the Chief of Defense Forces to release all POWs and political detainees to a third party. But Gabriel says the SPLA-IO is not aware of any released political detainees in Juba, as the government claims.
Unless these names are released to the public, we will not know whether these people claim to be or allegedly released are political detainees or not.
Gabriel is calling on the government to release James Peter Gadet, Riek Machar's former spokesman, Egri Idri, an SPLM-IO official, lawyer Samuel Dong, and Mark Lokidor, the Sado governor of Kapweta State, along with other detainees. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Nobel Peace Prize is awarded to two people, including a doctor in Africa. Find out more when we return back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the most interesting conversation you've had recently with a friend?
We were talking about the laptops that the president promised to give to all registered university students. So we're kind of wondering whether they are going to reach every student or not, because all students are anxiously waiting for those laptops.
The most interesting conversation was about money. A friend of mine introduced me to a new business where I learned that I can actually make a lot of money without working so hard. And I love money, so it was really interesting.
Interesting conversation that I've had recently with my friend is that he's in a dilemma trying to figure out who to get married to between two ladies whom he loves with all his heart, the one who actually has all the qualities that he's looking for in a lady.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The 2017 Nobel Peace Prize has been awarded to Denis Mukwege, a gynecologist in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and to Nadia Murad, a Yazidi human rights activist and a survivor of sexual slavery by Islamic State in Iraq. The Norwegian Nobel Committee said Mukwege, who founded the Panzi Hospital in Bukavu, is the most unifying symbol of the struggle to end sexual violence in war. Mukwege has called on churches to speak out against sexual abuse and condemn inhumanity that some men show towards women. He has said the world must draw a red line against sexual violence. He also has criticized what he calls unbearable atrocities being committed in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo by armed groups. His co-winner, Nadia Murad, was a captive of the Islamic State group. The prize committee says she refused to accept the social codes that require women to remain silent and ashamed of the abuses they suffer. Murad and Mukwege will share the Nobel's Golden Medal, a diploma, and a check of about $1 million. The UN wants to eliminate female genital mutilation in the next 12 years, as millions of girls are at risk of the practice around the world. Sayen Dengbio reports, meeting that goal is an undertaking that has brought together politicians and advocates.
The World Health Organization estimates some 200 million women and girls alive today have undergone female genital mutilation in countries where FGM is practiced, and about 3 million girls are at risk every year.
This is a very silent crime. I think both males and females need to discuss the impact of this on the mental health, the psychological status, and the body injuries that women suffer from forever.
That's Gada Wali, Egypt's Minister of Social Solidarity, speaking at a high-level meeting on the elimination of FGM at this year's UN General Assembly. The UNFPA, or UN Population Fund, is trying to galvanize governments around the world to eliminate female genital mutilation by 2030. The initiative is designed to protect 68 million at-risk girls in the next 12 years by using regional and domestic resources, as well as available legal resources.
I think rule of law is very important, but it's important and it's necessary, but it's not enough. Because in our country, in our part of the world, in Africa, culture has proven to be stronger in many cases than rule of law. We have to have the legislation in place, but we really have to empower women themselves to defend themselves. And it starts with education.
Female genital mutilation includes all procedures that involve altering or injuring the female genitalia for non-medical reasons, according to WHO. The UN considers FGM a human rights violation and a violation of the medical ethics code to do no harm. Aissata Kamara, a women's and children's advocate from Guinea, says she is tired of talking about solutions and urges governments to act.
This is a call to action for women and girls. This is a call to action for our bodies. I want to thank you for being in this room, but I want to also say to anyone that is listening that the silence cannot carry on.
Dr. Natalia Kanem, the UN Population Fund's executive director, credits the work of Kamara and others who have acted to stop the practice.
So the voices of those who take a stand against the practice resound powerfully. We've seen what a difference champions of change make at the community level. And now, as we roll out the next phase of the joint program, it is time to take this form of advocacy to the next level in the political sphere.
WHO has documented FGM in 30 countries in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, and some forms of the practice in South America. Wali says educating communities is the best way to eliminate the practice that has both cultural and religious meanings in certain African countries, a practice that is often performed on girls by women in 17 African countries.
We have been created complete, and we do not need such evasive and criminal acts to make us better people, better women, and more honorable women.
South Sudan is not on the list of countries that have reported FGM, although its neighbors, Sudan, Ethiopia, Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic, have all documented reports of women and girls undergoing the practice. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we move to Cameroon, where voters go to the polls on Sunday for a presidential election despite security challenges in three parts of the Central African state. Thousands of polling stations in the restive English-speaking regions and the Boko Haram-prone north have been relocated. But as Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé, after 36 years of President Paul Biya, many voters are skeptical about whether their vote even counts.
Cameroon's Minister of Agriculture, Henry Eyebe Ayisi, pleads in the Ewondo language for people to cast their vote on Sunday's presidential election. President Paul Biya sent Ayisi to campaign for him in Monatele, a town near Cameroon's capital city, where he spoke to a crowd. Among the audience is Mercy Nkwenti, a teacher who escaped violence in her town Bamenda, capital of the English-speaking Northwest. She says on her way to Yaoundé, armed men ambushed their bus and seized her voter card.
What they said is, why are you guys voting? You already know the winner. Why should you waste time to vote? Then they took it.
Nkwenti says she does not know if the armed men were separatists who have vowed to disrupt the presidential election. Despite the threats, she would still vote if allowed, because Cameroon, she says, needs a change of leadership. Not all Cameroonians are as keen on the election as Nkwenti. Cameroon's National Institute of Statistics says there are 13 million potential voters in Cameroon, but only half the population has bothered to register to vote. 37-year-old electrician Emmanuel Nga refused to register because he has no confidence in the elections management body. Nga notes cynically that all the election officials are appointed by President Biya, who is himself a candidate and, at 36 years in office, one of Africa's longest ruling leaders.
My one problem is I don't have a voter's card, and even I had, there's no need for me to vote because nothing will change the way I see. We don't know if we're going in front or behind.
In Cameroon's troubled English-speaking regions, where separatists are fighting for an independent state, few are expected to vote. And election observers are reluctant to visit the areas of unrest, which could put the legitimacy of the vote into question. Felix Monono is an election observer with the Center for Research on Governance.
Those separatists even issued an embargo that there should be no movement. If you are caught, they may kill you, they may kidnap you. And then secondly, the security who are there, they are also a big threat because they are like trying to control movement, and then at times they are also very hostile to people around, so we are not very sure what can happen.
Along its northern border with Nigeria, Cameroonian authorities moved more than 10 polling stations to locations safe from Boko Haram. Despite no major violence in the past year, authorities fear the Islamist militant group could be provoked by Sunday's election. 8 presidential candidates are challenging Biya, who is seeking a fresh 7-year mandate. But faced with a divided opposition, Biya is widely expected to win. His main opponents include Joshua Osi of the main opposition Social Democratic Front and Akere Muna, a veteran lawyer and former vice president of Transparency International. The Ministry of Justice's Maurice Kamto is leading the Movement for Cameroon's Renaissance, MRC, party to the polls. Cabral Libi is an eloquent 38-year-old journalist and candidate for the Universe Party. Other candidates include Gaga Haman Aje of the Alliance for Democracy and Development and Adamu Ndamjoya of the Cameroon Democratic Union. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
U.S. First Lady Melania Trump today visited 2 Kenyan orphanages, one for children, one for elephants, on her week-long tour of Africa. Trump stopped by the elephant orphanage on a visit to Nairobi National Park, a few kilometers south of the Kenyan capital. She fed a baby elephant using a giant bottle and got a small bump from another baby eager for its feeding. In Nairobi, reporter Ruben Chama talks to Kenyans for their thoughts on the U.S. First Lady's visit.
With the U.S. First Lady Melania Trump visiting Kenya as part of our four-nation tour of Africa, Kenyans are expressing their views about the high-profile visit. Hilda Njeri is a Bachelor of Commerce student from the University of Nairobi.
I think it has come at the right time where she should come and maybe talk about her campaign, Be Best, which deals with issues to do with youth, particularly youth and drug abuse, cyberbullying. Particularly the drug opioid. So I think she should focus on the youth, especially in Kenya, maybe try to advise people against the use of drugs.
Another student, Joan Kiarie, says Mrs. Trump's visit will help spotlight issues that affect children in Africa.
I think she can be able to shed a light on some African issues that have not been able to reach the part of America before. Although she's not exactly a strong international figure, we're hoping she will at least bring some help to the country.
Kiarie says lack of access to education, especially among the poorest and among girls, should be given top priority.
You should target areas which do not see education, the children who are still getting married at a young age, or the children who are told to work instead of go to school and study, or like how there's an issue where girls, instead of going to school when they are facing, when they're having their menstrual period, instead of going to school, they stay at home. Or where boys, instead of going to school, are told to stay at home and look after the cows. I think she should focus on education in Africa mostly.
Others like Olenyo Okello have a different opinion.
Her visiting us will be an eye-opener. She could at least go back and share these views with the president. We have that potential to grow as a society. She could also help encourage our youth, the ladies and the young girls we have in societies, that they can really make something good out of this, of themselves, since she has a background in modeling.
Through a campaign called Be Best, which she launched earlier this year, Mrs. Trump has focused on issues touching on child welfare, drug abuse, and cyberbullying. Anzense Were, a renowned Kenyan development economist, agrees those issues are of great concern.
I think drug abuse is an issue that's growing in concern. I think because of the exposure that particularly the young Kenyans have to international media and the types of drugs that are becoming increasingly available in the country. So I think that's relevant. I think cyberbullying is also important, particularly for young people who are active online. There have been cases where people have been bullied online and sort of the negative fallout from that. In terms of the priority of things, it may not be up there, but it's definitely stuff that young people grapple with.
Mrs. Trump arrived in Kenya late Thursday from Malawi for a series of public events on Friday before leaving for Egypt, our final stop. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Fees Sabab by Ras Corby.
Fees Sabab, the cool Haji Al Bahasil Fidunia. Original Rascals.
Face me, confess, Sabab, yeah.
Face
me, confess, Sabab. Lassie me confess sabab, yeah.
Free sabab.
Lassie me confess sabab, oh.
Free sabab.
Para puna kala kutunia,
free sabab.
Para woman bira bayar,
free sabab.
Para chamech wa gambra bitala, lassie.
Free sabab.
Lassie me confess sabab, yeah.
Free sabab,
lassie me confess sabab, oh.
Free sabab,
lassie me confess sabab, yeah.
Free sabab,
lassie me confess sabab, oh. Free sabab, but you no bring that girl to free sabab, aye. Free sabab, but not stand inside the road, Nina, aye. Free sabab,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Free sabab, but shan them she get down. Yeah,
free sabab,
oh nah, oh, 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 oh.
We've been listening to Ras Corby with the song Fees Sabab. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. If you would like to add comments or feedback on this show, our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us out on Twitter. Our handle is @VOASouthSudan. We hope you have a relaxing weekend. Join us again Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Lassie me confess sabab, yeah.
Fees sabab.